Hello and welcome to another episode of the Scarlet Nation podcast on the 24/7 Sports Network. I'm Chris Akonis, joined by Bobby Darin, and today, as we go through this Rutgers football bye week, we are recording another Q&A podcast. As Bobby and I will go through each question that we have on this thread here and give as much insight as we can on anything you want to know about Rutgers athletics. So a lot of good questions to get through here, Bobby, 32 to be exact by my count. And, I'm looking forward to hearing these questions and trying to help them out.
Yeah, Chris, a lot of inquisitive readers out there. We appreciate it. So, I'm going to jump right in because the first question is directed towards you. MJMMD says, Chris, do we beat Princeton in the opener? Rutgers opens against Princeton on November 6th, basketball. You were there at the scrimmage against St. John's last weekend. Watched them play. Do they win?
Yes. I feel confident saying that Rutgers will be able to beat Princeton in the opener. I think I may have touched on this a little bit in a previous podcast. I do think this Princeton team is a lot better than teams Rutgers has faced in their previous openers. I don't think it's like a 30, 40 point blowout or anything like that. I think Princeton's a well-coached team. They've got some talented players coming back from last year. And I do think that they'll be able to give Rutgers a good early test, but I do think the Scarlet Knights come away with the win. It's a neutral site game down in Trenton. I do think there will be a good amount of Princeton fans with this being an old rivalry being renewed, but I do think it will be a leaning Rutgers building just because there are more Rutgers fans, I think, in the area. So I do think Rutgers comes away with the win there, and I'm not I'm pretty confident that they're going to be Princeton. Let me put it that way. I think it'll be a relatively close game, but I think Rutgers comes out on top.
You have it. Bet on Rutgers. Chris says so.
all right. Now, on that note, we go to NJ Knight 05, who asks, not sure if this is too hypothetical or generic, but with our struggles on offense, I'm wondering how far off our existing players are. How many of our guys do you think would crack the starting lineup with a top tier offense? I'm thinking maybe Holland Pierce as a right tackle or Manungai at running back. Anyone else?
Well, I mean, look, at Manungai is probably going to be a draftable guy, and so is Holland Pierce. So if these guys are NFL draft worthy, I think they're capable of playing on some decent teams. Now, top-tier teams, are you talking Ohio State, Michigan, might be tough. They're full of four-stars and guys, their backups are four-stars. So I don't know the rosters in and out of the teams that might not be, right below Ohio State's and Michigan's, but it'd be pretty tough for you look at that starting lineup without Pierce and Manungai, and which guys are going to start on Michigan, Ohio State, Penn State. I don't think too many of them. So, but those two guys are going to be NFL guys. So I think those guys are capable of holding themselves anywhere if they're going to be able to play on Sundays.
Good point. And we move right on to RPK69, who asks, at this point in the season, how do you think we will measure up against Iowa and Maryland?
Very good. I mean, Iowa has no offense. I mean, they just lost to Minnesota 12-10, and Minnesota's offense stinks without Kurt Soraka. So I think they measure up well. I think they could win either of those games. They could win both of those games. And in Maryland, they're not they played well at times, but they've showed they're susceptible to being beat. They're not Penn State, Ohio State, or Michigan. So I think they measure up well. I think they measure up really good against Iowa because it's going to be a defensive game, and all you have to do is just get a couple touchdowns, and you could win that game. I mean, the Iowa offense is terrible. At least with Maryland, you have to worry about the quarterback, Tua's brother. So, I think they match up well. I think those are two games that they could win conceivably.
Yeah, I would generally agree with that. I would say, to your point, Iowa – I feel more comfortable about than Maryland, even though it is at Kinnick Stadium, which is a very difficult place to win in general, just because I think this Rutgers defense can go toe-to-toe with Iowa's defense in a way that, the defense had shown improvement last year, but they weren't quite at the point where they could match Iowa's defense, if you remember that game last year. And, of course, Rutgers' offense has shown good signs of improvement. Iowa has not. And Iowa, keep in mind, Cade McNamara not playing right now. It's their backup quarterback. So that is another factor to keep in mind as well. And in terms of Maryland, on the one hand, you are at home. And if Rutgers you know, comes in last game of the year at home. I think it'll be a good atmosphere, all things considered. I think that'll be a benefit, but at the same time, I think Rutgers has a good defense. I think Rutgers has a defense that can keep the Scarlet Knights in the game with Maryland. I just think at the end, Talia Tagovailoa is going to have, you know, that one extra player, that one extra push, and the offense is just going to be able to edge out Rutgers. But I think it'll certainly be a lot more competitive than it was last year. And I think either of those games I would put as, you know, games that Rutgers could conceivably win if things go the way that, you know, Rutgers would want them to go. I think those are the two more winnable games, to put it that way. So I think those are opportunities for Rutgers to go from where they are now, which is 6 wins, to, you know, potentially a 7, or if things really break the right way, an 8-win season, which would be, of course, a major benefit for the program, given, you know, the division they're in and just the overall schedule that Rutgers has had to play this year. I think that would be a massive accomplishment. So a big opportunity there for sure.
I think, you know, they could beat either one of those teams. Now, I'm going to hit you with the next question, because you were at the men's basketball scrimmage. Justin 3164211 says, after the first men's basketball scrimmage, what's the one thing to be excited about and the one thing to be worried about for this upcoming season, Chris?
Ooh, that's a good one. I'm going to say excited about, I really liked the way the offense flowed, particularly in the second half. And I don't just mean in terms of making shots. I liked the way Rutgers was moving the ball. It was a lot less, you know, isolation heavy. It was a lot less, you know, one player trying to make it work. Things didn't always click, but then again, remember preseason scrimmage, guys are still trying to get in the flow of regular game action. I liked the way the ball moved around. I thought that that was a very encouraging sign. I thought Rutgers just looked a little bit quicker compared to in the past. And I think that's the athleticism, you know, that we've talked about with this team. So I'm excited about that. In addition to all the individual players who I think are going to have big years. Thing I'm worried about, and this is not something that, you know, I say often about Rutgers basketball, is the defense. Not because I don't think the defense will necessarily be good, but because at the end of the day, it's very hard to replace someone like a Caleb McConnell. I mean, Mawat Mag is a very versatile defender in his own right, but, you know, he's still working his way back. He's not going to be 100% right away. You know, so I think that's going to be hard. I did notice a bit of a drop off defensively against St. John's, who, you know, in fairness, are a very good team in their own right. So I would say the defense I'm a little concerned about. I'm really curious to see how the perimeter defense evolves once the season begins. I think, you know, Coach Peichel is going to be able to coach up defense because that's what he does. But I do think compared to last year, there is going to be a drop off. So I'd say that would be the thing I'm worried about. But, you know, I think on the whole, I feel pretty good about where Rutgers basketball is, all things considered. I think the potential is there to make a push for the NCAA tournament, but we could get a little more into that later on if that warrants. But that's kind of where I'm at in terms of basketball.
Okay, good answer.
Yeah, so on that note, we go over to Sean Lang, who asks, if Rutgers keeps it reasonably close against Ohio State and beats Iowa, do you think Rutgers is ranked?
Probably, because, look, a lot of these voters don't watch all the games. They look at the scores. And if they play Ohio State with a close score, it doesn't matter what the context of the game is, people will say, wow, they, you know, we might have to vote them up after the Iowa game. So, yes, they probably will be if they keep it close because, you know, like I said, these voters aren't watching all the games and they just look at the scores. So I wouldn't put too much weight into that. It really doesn't. It doesn't play that much into the outcome of the season or whatnot. So I wouldn't really waste any time worrying about that.
Yeah. And I could just say in our experience, Bobby, when we're covering a Rutgers game, that is an all day event. If there is anything in sports journalism, that's an all day event in terms of covering a game. So, you know, just the reporters voting on the poll, just it's very hard to watch every
they're
team.
They're not experts. Yeah.
And that's not like a knock on them. It's just the reality. There are a lot of teams in college football, and it's hard to get a good perspective. But I do think perception-wise, if Rutgers can keep the Ohio State game close and beat Iowa on the road, see, man, Iowa, you know, as flawed as their offense is, they're still one of the better teams there. You know, I do think that, you know, I do think the perception will go up, and I think that could be a possibility. But on that note, we move on to Kay Jax. Who asks, hope all is well. I have two questions. One, both Ohio State and Penn State have really good defenses, but their offenses, especially Penn State, aren't among the best in the nation. Who do you think Rutgers has the best chance of upsetting out of the two?
I would say Penn State, because you look at, you know, I don't know. It's tough both ways. I think they could make more of a defensive battle against Penn State. Let's put it that way. But then again, Ohio State's not scoring as much this year. Look, for them to pull off an upset to either one, everything's going to have to go right. The other team's going to have to make mistakes. It's still a huge talent gap between the two. So I don't want to call upset yet, but everything would have to go right. And I'd probably lean on Penn State more as a more upset prone team, because, you know, Ohio State's just got elite level talent, Chris.
And the second question is, who or what do you think the biggest X factor that people may not think of is for Rutgers to make the NCAA tournament this year?
Ooh, that's a good one. You know, I think they're going to have to score. I don't think there's one X factor. You know, you might have you saw them play. I mean, do you think there's one X factor? It's kind of tough to pinpoint. What I think you could say easily, Chris, Watt Mag coming back would be an X factor, just because you saw what the team could not do without him. It wasn't the same team. So I guess if you have to pick an X factor of a player, you'd probably point to him. What would your take be on that one?
Yeah, I would definitely say Mag would be a big one. I'd say the biggest would have to be Cliff Amore, just because he's such a good center. The Big Ten has been such a center-dominant league. If you have a big center, you can compete on any given night. If you don't, it can be really hard. So I would say Cliff Amore, and also because, you know, and this isn't, you know, a knock necessarily on Antoine Woolfolk or, you know, when he gets healthy, Emmanuel Ogbo, but Cliff Amore is just, you know, one of the better centers in all of college basketball. So, you know, having him back is huge. I think that's the bigger thing that has kept Rutgers in the conversation to make it back to the tournament. So I would have to go with Cliff Amore on that one.
Okay, good call.
Yeah, so on that note, Butters 96 asks, what should the target recruiting class rank be for this year's class and then next?
Target rank?
Like, I guess, like top 30, top 35, whatever, you know, ranking.
The target rank should be number one. You're always looking for the best. But, I mean, what will they settle for? I mean, you always shoot for the best. I mean, Greg's going to try to get the best players, but – you know, in the NIL age, what's going on, you know, with the situation, I'm not going to get into deep one about that, but you're always shooting for the best. But I mean, if you can get that class in the 20 to 30 range, that's a huge accomplishment. You know, Greg had the, when he left, that class was really big. It was really highly ranked. And that's the reason they got Kyle Flood. They wanted to keep that class together. Ironically, some of those guys never panned out, those highly ranked guys. You know, guys like Ryan Brody, Miles Shuler, even Savon Huggins didn't live up to the billing. But that's another story for another time, Chris. I think if you can, that class was finished around 24 or something like that. So if you can get up to that again, that's kind of where he left off. And then maybe you can build from there. But I think you're looking at this class probably being around the 35 range or so.
Yeah, that's where the class stands right now. And it looks, and 24 class looks mostly set. So that certainly looks to be the range where that's going to finish. On that note, we go to RU Teal Rice, who asks, has there been any talk about a Power 5 out-of-conference opponent for 2025?
Not a Power 5. They were supposed to they were supposed to play Ohio that year, but haven't heard anything beyond that. I mean, that's who's listed. I mean, in 2025, it's supposed to play Ohio. 2026, it was supposed to be a Boston College game and UMass. You know, with the change in the schedule, I don't know if that's all going to happen. Akron's supposed to be 27 with Boston College, Kansas State in 2030. I don't know that gets changed down the line, but those are the ones we have in front of us. Haven't heard anything other than that.
Okay, and there are open slots in that schedule, so curious to see how that plays out as well. Scarlett Thorne asks, how is Marquise Watson doing?
Marquise is doing better. I'm not going to get into the details of it, but let's just say it was rough there for a while, but it's on the, you know, he's getting better and things are progressing better than they were. So still a ways off, still a lot, you know, of healing up to do. But the good news is that we're finally making steps. So Marquise is a great guy. So, you know, even Greg said, I asked him about him after Tuesday's practice. And he said, you know, keep him in your prayers. And he said, Greg visits him regularly, goes to see him. I mean, you know, he's a hard football coach, but Greg Schiano's a good guy. Like, something like that. He's very human about a lot of things, and that's one of them, and that kind of shows that as well. So this is a genuine concern for him, but Marquise is getting better.
Good to hear for sure. Corner Tavern asks, my question, when considering our success so far this season, what's the most important factor? Depth versus injuries, better player execution, development since last season, better game day coaching, or other?
I think it's all of them. I mean, if you look at that, you know, you have some depth. I mean, look, they're on their third starting right tackle now. You went from Ty Needham to Kamar Mazzouri to Reggie Sutton. You know, they're not all Big Ten players, but, they're actually holding their own. Then you have the injuries. Tyrene Powell just got hurt. That's the biggest injury that we've seen so far. Ty Needham went down, but, you know, it was only a second start at right tackle. Rene Congo went down, and, you know, he was doing a heck of a job, but, you know, he wasn't a starter. He was coming in and doing a good job, you know, as part of that rotation and part of the pass rush, but, you know, these injuries did not decimate the team. So I think that helps. And you see better player execution. It's crisper in a lot of ways. You see the development. Gavin Wimp said himself, he's not a finished product by any means, but definitely a better player and better game day coach. And you still have Joe Harris-Simeon back. I think Kirk Soraka's done an excellent job. Sometimes I'm critical of him because he runs the ball so much and doesn't throw it. But then when they throw it, something bad happens. And, you know, it's like, all right, I can see why you're doing it. But he's playing to these players' strengths. So I think it's a little bit of everything. Corner Tavern kind of answered his own question there.
Yeah, and I think one point I'm just going to add to that real quick is the turnovers. You know, Gavin Wimsett has thrown 4 interceptions in 8 games. 2 of those come in against Michigan State. So numbers a little skewed there, but he's done a much better job of not turning the football over. And nothing will get you out of a game quicker than throwing interceptions. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter how good the defense is. So I think that's a huge factor in why Rutgers has looked so much better through the first 8 games of the season. Kind of sticking on the injury note for a second, Redline HW asks, will Rene Conga be back for the Ohio State game?
I mean, it's still a lot of time till then. I can't give you a definitive answer. He's got one of those injuries that it just takes time. And when you get back out there, you're pushing down, pushing pressure on the lower leg there or on the lower foot. And, it just takes time. And it's tough for athletes to really sit there and do nothing, you know, because they want to. And Greg Schiano really emphasizes the importance of practice. Hopefully he'll be able to get back out there. I can't say for certain, though, because it's still touch and go.
And Nittany Knight 9 wants to know, who is going to enroll early in the class of 2024? I've got a list written down of who we have heard is planning to enroll early so far. And we had talked a little bit about this in the past and reported on some of this in the past. AJ Serace, quarterback, running back, Gabe Winovich, KJ Duff, wide receiver, Antonio White, DK Gilly, Kaj Sanders. Those are the guys that right now have told us are planning to enroll early. A couple caveats there. One is that, enrolling early, more guys I think will end up enrolling early. Last year's class, Bobby, I think had 9, if I remember correctly. So that can change.
But they had more last year. I think they had about 12, Chris.
12. Okay. I think it was 12 who came early and 9 that came on the regular schedule. So I think that's
where and that changes. Like the guys who are planning on doing it now, some of them might actually get it done, but not everybody. You know, you have to get all that academics in order, and a lot of guys would if they could, but a lot of guys, you know, they can't squeeze all that in. So it'll fluctuate a little bit. You'll hear a guy, I'm planning on it, and then he might not make it. Like Johnny Shepard came late, he was a late addition. He wasn't part of the original 11 or whatever, 10 that we had. So then he came, and then, you know what I mean? So some of it's right down to the wire. So, we have about a half a dozen confirmed now. So I would expect more, Chris. I'd expect about half the class to be here early.
And now we move on to Mark G 1504, who asks, availability for Ohio State or Iowa, Rene Conga and Chris Long, your best guesstimate, please. And thanks for all the great coverage of Rutgers football. Much appreciated.
Well, thank you for reading, Mark. We appreciate you. And as I said about Conga, you know, like I said, touch and go, I don't know. And with Chris Long, too, it's another lower body injury, we'll call it. I mean, everybody saw it. It was, you know, what happened. He came up limping. And it just takes time. And even when it's healed, he's got to get back to being able to cut, to being able to accelerate and do all those things. He might be, you know, healthy with it, but you have to be football healthy is a different story. I mean, you know, you lose one step out there and you're not as good as the next guy because, you know, you need that speed. So I thought Long was going to be back sooner. It's taken a little longer than expected, but I think he's got a better chance of getting back ahead of all the other injured guys. And so, you know, hopeful that we'll see him against Ohio State.
All right. On that note, Vasco247 asks, is AJ Cerace a Big Ten level recruit given he plays for a smaller school? Is it fair to say his early commitment, small school background, limited exposure in the recruiting world explains his lack of national coverage and modest ranking?
Yeah, I mean, you know, every year Jersey gets a handful of four stars and that's about it. So is he overlooked? Maybe. He doesn't play the best competition, but you know what? He has 23 touchdowns and one interception. I don't care who you're playing. That's pretty good. They were down 13 the other night, Chris, and late in the third quarter, and he rallied them back. We got the win. And you know, another important thing when you look at quarterbacks, you want a winner, a guy knows how to win, guy that isn't afraid to take the game in his hands. And that's what you see out of him. And certain guys just have that it factor, you know, to become a leader, to become a guy who makes plays. And he has that kind of ability, and he's a very smart football player. He's a coach's kid, and he's not, you know, he's not concerned. You know him, Chris. He's not concerned with all this, the media attention and the social media. He's a football guy. He likes it. And that's one thing Greg really likes about him. I mean, you've spoken to him at length. What's your take on him?
First thing that struck me is just the maturity, you know, mm-hmm. and, you know, you talk to him, you don't get the sense that he hasn't set foot on a college campus as a college quarterback yet. He has that veteran poise already, which I think is really encouraging. And, you know, he really buys into what Rutgers really wants to do offensively and as a program. And you hear it when you talk to him. So, you know, pair that with what he's been able to show on the football field. He's having a heck of a year with Notre Dame and can really do it all. So I'm very encouraged from what I've heard from him. I think Rutgers fans are going to be encouraged, I should say, about, you know, his trajectory when he gets on campus. And I think, you know, the rankings and all that, you know, that stuff, it matters in terms of, you know, the class rankings and all that. But once you get on a college campus, you know, everyone's sort of ranked the same. You know, the coaching staff decides who plays and you know, who's doing what. And it becomes a whole new ball game. So I think, you know, the potential is certainly there for AJ Cerace from, you know, what I've heard from him and what I've seen from him. So I think he's going to be a very intriguing prospect for sure.
And has a, you know, like I said, is having a great season and, you know, it seems very promising. So, you know, with that, Chris, I'm going to hit you with the next one because it's some basketball questions about the scrimmage. RST95 says, I didn't notice much mention of Austin Williams. How do you think he will fit into the rotation?
Well, that's a good question. Austin Williams did play in the scrimmage. He got a handful of minutes coming off of the bench. There wasn't a ton that particularly stood out. He kind of just came in, you know, played, you know, put his shift in, and there wasn't like a ton of, you know, moments that stood out either way. I think he's a solid depth piece in the backcourt. I do think he's going to get a significant amount of minutes in that role. I wouldn't expect him to start necessarily, but I do think he adds that veteran presence and that kind of skill set to a team that's bringing a lot of new guys in the backcourt. Let's keep that in mind. It's almost an entirely new backcourt outside of Derek Simpson. So I do think that's going to be valuable, and I think he'll have an important role to play in that regard. But there wasn't a ton in the St. John's game specifically that stood out to me. So that would be my answer for Williams.
And RST95 has another one. He says, do you think Chol may step up and be a rotational play this year? Second year for Antonio Chol in the program.
Yeah, I mean, I saw Chol. He played a similar workload to Austin. He came off the bench a bit. I think he can be a rotational player this year. Yes. This is someone who, you know, Steve Peichel is very high on his development. You know, only played a couple games before taking a red shirt last year. Someone who, you know, seems to be a lot more comfortable with the pace of the college game, just looks the part a lot more. So I do think he can step and be a rotational player. I'm curious to see what his role ultimately ends up being in terms of specific minutes, and, you know, usage, and, you know, how he's utilized with which lineups and stuff like that. I think it's a little too early for me to give a definitive answer on that. But I do think there is a role for Antonio Chole on this roster this year.
Hey, good answer.
Yeah. So on that note, we go to Brick Nerf, who asks, has Moses Walker, I think it says, lost a step from injury, or does he look as good as he did before the injury?
No, it was just a minor thing. He only sat out the Wagner game. It was just minor. But he's the same Moses Walker as before. I don't think you'll see him. You know, it was just a minor thing. Like, sometimes over the course of the season, you get these minor things that keep you out for a week. But he's back. He's fine. He's himself.
Okay, good to hear. And on that note, we go to Jiu-Jitsu, who always loves to pop in with these member features. Yo, Bobby, thank you to you and Chris for this feature. Hope everyone is well. Two questions out of him, too. So one, do you attribute Aaron Lewis and Wesley Bailey's average years more to the absence of Coach Watson, prayers to him on his recovery, or to their minor injuries they've sustained this season?
A man Jiu-Jitsu. You know, Bailey, if you watch Bailey, you know, he's got his knee wrapped, and they're not saying much about it. But, you know, ever since he was hurt early on, I you could see him going out a little more rotationally. I think, you know, that might have something to do with it. It's not significant enough where he'll have to sit, but it's definitely – you expected to see a lot more out of him. Now, I don't know the percentage of how much maybe that has impacted him, but, you know, it definitely could have, you know, could have done something to him. But Aaron Lewis has been healthy, and you know, I expected a lot more out of him this year too. He kind of padded his stats a little against Wagner, but we haven't seen the guy that you know, we were predicting to be one of the best players on this team. He's been solid, but he hasn't been elite. Does it have an effect from, or is that an effect of Coach Watson being out? You know, you'd like to say not a ton. It could affect them a little bit, but, you know, these are veteran guys. They know how to go out there and play. They can't blame their shortcomings on their coach not being on the sidelines. This is their fourth season, you know, playing in college football. So I don't think you can really hang their performance on that.
All right. And then the second question from Jiu-Jitsu, while I still think we might be lacking a bit relative to the Big Ten Blue Bloods for the remainder of the Big Ten teams, do you agree we've narrowed the gap both athletically and from a size strength perspective?
You know, I sat down today with Holland Pierce for a while and talked to him, and there's no gap there. I mean, as a big human being, but if you look across the line, they're not there yet with five Holland Pierces. You know what I mean? Not that everybody's got to be 6'8", but they're getting there. They have closed the gap, and but it's not quite there yet. You know, you look at those Blue Bloods, those guys are gargantuan, and they can move. They're not just big guys, Chris. These are big guys that have quick feet. They bend. I mean, they're athletic. They're just, there's a reason why some of these linemen are coveted 4 and 5 stars. There's a reason why some of these guys go in the portal and get so much dollars, because they're, you know, they have that athleticism with that size. And Rutgers is getting there, but there's still some work to do.
Yeah, and I did notice, though, one of the things we noticed going to training camp was just that the progress has been made, you know, compared to earlier in Greg Schiano's tenure to now. It does look like the team as a whole looks physically the part, wouldn't you say, Bobby?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it definitely looks better. But at the same time, you know, when you look at Ohio State on the sidelines, Michigan on the sidelines, you go, wow. So it's a work in progress, Chris.
All right. On that note, we go back to Mark G 1504. Bobby, does Moses Walker get some significant playing time now that Powell is out?
I think it gets some playing time, but, you know, if you look at the rotation, they were rotating Muhammad Touré in there. Jameer Wright Collins is in there. A lot of times Rutgers will run just two linebackers with three safeties. So I don't expect to see a huge bump. I could see him coming in spot situations, but just because Tyreem's out, don't expect, you know, all of a sudden Moses to get this crazy amount of playing time. But I think you'll see a lot more Muhammad Touré at linebacker, which he's played a lot at linebacker this year, and he's been really good. So I think when Iowa, the Iowa game, you'll see them run, trying to run the ball more. And I think you'll see three linebacker sets in there. So I think Moses could get some run there. And, you know, Ohio State, I'm not sure as much, but I could definitely see an uptick in his playing time.
Cheater Hughes asks, is Moses Walker fully healthy? And how big of a step back does the defense take with Tyreem out?
It's Moses Walker day. I don't blame him, you know, with the injury. A lot of people are curious about him. Very talented kid, too. Former four-star, just an electric player. Yeah, he's fully healthy. And, you know, how big of a step back do they take? Well, you know, I mentioned Muhammad Toure being there and him being able to step in. So it's not a huge of a hit as you might expect. Yes, he is the leading tackler. Yes, he is one of the best players on the team. But they have some depth at that linebacker. And the fact that they only use two linebackers in a lot of situations really helps because they can put Muhammad back there. And maybe they lose a little at the rush end, but Muhammad's playing really good football.
All right, we go over to RU in Chi-Town, who asks, any chance Powell puts on a cast in order to play the rest of the season?
Well, he's getting surgery on his hand, so I'm not a doctor, and I can't comment on all that. But Greg Schiano said he's going to be done for the season. So right now I'd have to go with what they told me about it, and that looks like he's going to be done. So, you know, he's got his future to think about, too. Does he want to try to enter the draft this year? There's a lot to work out there, but I don't think we'll see him back at all this year.
All right, ChrisMan316 asks, now that we've secured bowl eligibility, does the offense open up a bit? Figure that any extra wins are quote-unquote gravy, and believe me, I know Sean and the staff will always do what they think gives them the best chance to be 1-0 in any given week, but given that the specter of bowl eligibility has moved away, I feel like they have an opportunity to play a bit more loose and take more chances to score points if for no other reason continue to develop players, especially Wimsett. So, Bobby, does the offense open up a bit more in the last month?
I mean, they take shots. They throw the ball down the field, but they don't have wide receivers. They can get behind guys, get behind the defense, you know? So, I mean, do they open it up? I mean, why would they open it up if they can't get separation, if they can't get open downfield? It doesn't make any sense. They will take shots. Kurt Soraka's known to take shots, but I don't think you're going to see a lot different. I mean, the team, the players are what they are right now. They're a running football team. I mean, if you look, there's no real receiving threat at tight end. The wide receivers sometimes really struggle. So, they're going to do what they do best, and that's run the football. And they'll mix some passes in, but they're not going to open it up and show some crazy air raid stuff. It's just not what they do. It might not be the most exciting or dynamic offense from a fan perspective, but they're going to run what they do best, and they're not going to put too much on Gavin's plates. So I wouldn't expect an aerial display, you know, coming your way in the last four games.
All right. And on that note, Nittany at Night 9 asks, how do you feel Gavin's developed so far through the season now that we're 8 games in? And what do you want to see from him through the rest of the season and against Ohio State?
I think he's developed. I think you see the progress. There's some stuff you would like to see differently. I mean, he's still throwing high to receivers, and you know, it seems like he's always. You remember we were watching him in the spring and in training camp, and every time, sometimes he threw to Dremel, you'd say, "Man, Dremel should be a foot taller. He would have had that." But you know, he's progressing. If you look at where he's at this year and last year, you know, much better. And look what he does running the football. I mean, how many quarterbacks have Rutgers had over the years that could make that 80-yard run? I don't know too many. So, you know, it's baby steps for him. He's still 19 years old. So he's progressing. Yes, there are some things you'd like to see him do better. But he's made some throws at times where you go, wow, you know, if he can put it all together, a kid could be special.
Yeah, and kind of down the turnovers, go back to my earlier point, I think that's been a huge one, too. Boy. Not just in terms of his development, but also in keeping Rutgers, you know, not making the wins closer and keeping the games like Michigan and Wisconsin more in reach. I do think limiting turnovers and not having those 2-3 turnover games, I think that's been huge for him, too. Nittany Knight also asks, any word on Chris Long and which wide receivers are on track to redshirt?
Well, we kind of covered the Long one in the previous question. You got most of the freshmen are on track to redshirt. There were 7 of them. The only one that's probably not going to is Ian Strong. Jesse Ofuri played in, I believe it was 3 games. So you can still get him under that amount. I'll have to double check on you for that. But, you know, you have guys like, Davon Fuse is not going to, he's been playing special teams all year. So he's a guy that I think fans should really be excited about. You know, he's got a lot of athleticism, but he's got a lot to work on. Then you have some younger guys, you know, Dylan Brathwaite, a guy like Valet Nakoon, he's still learning. DeAndre Johnson, he's just scratching the surface. I mean, if he can get some weight on him, you know, look out. He's a really big target. You can go up, get some jump balls, but he's got to put some weight on, you know. So Davon has already played in 5 games, so his red shirt is burned. You know, Ian Strong obviously has that amount. And, you know, Jesse's still at 3. So I think Jesse can slide under that. He did some really good things in training camp, and that injury kind of set them back. I thought, you know, maybe they'd move a little forward with them, but they're sticking so heavy with the run, there might just not be a reps to go around at wide receiver, Chris.
All right. On that note, we get what I believe is our first mod question of the podcast from DJ Spanky, who asks, is Sutton out of eligibility after this season?
Yeah, he's done after this year. This is it. So kind of his swan song, but it's been a really good one for him, Chris.
Yeah, certainly a great comeback story for Reggie Sutton so far, and just a great journey to see from him through everything he's gone through, for sure. On that note, we go to RU Knights 83, who has 2 questions as well. One, do you think Jamichael Davis could surprise us and actually become one of our top two guards this season?
You know, you saw him at the game, so I gotta spin that one back to you. And he played quite a bit at the end. What'd you think out of what'd you see out of him? What'd you think of him?
I was very impressed with what I saw from him. I don't know if I'd quite go far to say he'll be consistently one of the top two guards this season. I want to see a bit of a bigger sample size, but you know, you saw everything that we had heard about him, and you know, talking to, you know, his high school coaches and just getting a better sense, you know, the quickness, the toughness on defense. He's very, you know, quick on defense. Attacking, he can sort of get a step behind guys, which not everybody can do. He has that aggressiveness and athleticism combination that you don't always see. Not quite the same player, but it kind of reminds me a little bit of what Jacob Young had when he was at Rutgers. Again, not a like-for-like comparison, but I do notice a similarity there. I think the potential is there for him to really have some nice flashes. I'm curious to see what he does across a longer span, because I saw him in the one scrimmage against St. John's. He looked really good. But I do think the potential is there for him to have a really good freshman year. I don't know if I would go top two quite yet, but I do think he can become an impactful contributor. And I'm excited to see, you know, what he becomes this year. I think it's going to be a very interesting storyline. Second question from RU Knights 83, what do you think the football team has to do the rest of the way to play in Vegas, Phoenix, or Nashville in a bowl game, win one more game or two?
We just did it. I did a bunch. You did a bunch on the article. So the Vegas Bowl, you probably have to win 2 to get considered. Music City Bowl in Nashville, 2 to get considered. Guarantee Rate Bowl, maybe just 1 more to get in there. But if they're thinking Vegas or Music City, Chris, and you just did the long form on it, it's probably 2, right?
Yeah. Those bowls, you really, I think, you know, there have been situations where some of the bowls we talked about would accept a 6-win team. But it's very, it usually is if, you know, that's their best option. Usually that's not the case. So yeah, 7, really 8 wins to have a really broad potential list of options. I think 8 wins would have to really be comfortable. 7 is sort of borderline. Because keep in mind, the Pinstripe Bowl has also had some 7-win teams over the last couple of years, too. So it's possible Rutgers wins 7 and still ends up there.
I think 7, I would say Guarantee Rate or Pinstripe.
Right.
8, you're looking at maybe Vegas, maybe Music City. But a lot has to do with what other teams do. So, and then if you're at 6, you still have, they don't win another game. I would say, you know, Quick Lane is obviously there and Pinstripe. So Pinstripe could be 6 or 7, like you said.
Yeah, definitely. And a lot to work out also with, you know, teams very rarely, if ever, get selected to go, you know, to the same bowl in like a few year span. You almost never see a repeat. So, you know, it's just that's the other factor, too, is like, oh, if there are 2 teams in contention for a bowl, and one of them played in it last year or the year before, you know, that kind of process of elimination leaves the other team. So that's the other factor you got to keep in mind too. It's not quite as straightforward as, oh, you have 8 wins, you're going to this bowl. So it's very complicated, and I'm curious to see how the bowl picture shapes out over the next couple of weeks, not just in terms of Rutgers, but in terms of what other teams do. But on that note, we go to Alex Haas, who asks, can you tell me what sort of signals Rutgers football uses during games? And please be as specific as you can, asking for a friend.
I think they use rock, paper, scissors in the first half. And then I don't know, what do they do in the second half? They do some type of sign language, I think, Chris.
Okay. All right. Glad we could sort that out for completely benign purposes, of course. OCSD158 asks, looking back at 2006, arguably Shiano's best team in his first go around, who from this year's team do you think would start on that team?
It's tough because, you know, the players are bigger, stronger, faster now. I mean, there's not a Tyreen Powell on that team. I mean, you know, they didn't have 6'5 linebackers that ran like him. You know, Devron Thompson was just over 200 pounds. So I think it's tough because, you know, the times have changed so much. But I didn't cover the 2006. I started in 07, so I didn't get a look up close and personal at them. I mean, obviously, you know what they can do. I mean, Ray Rice is going to start on any team, you know, as, you know. So, I mean, but the rest of them, it'd be interesting because you'd have to put the size of these players up against the size of those players. And the guys have just gotten bigger, faster, and stronger, Chris. So I don't know if I can make that comparison accurately.
Yeah, and it's also a different style of football too, as you get between a wider time gap, so it's not apples to oranges. But I thought that was an interesting thought experiment.
It is. It would be something we'd have to really explore more, and I think some of the fans might actually be able to give input in that because a lot of people were there and watched every game that year. I didn't, so I mean, I came on in 07. When you see the guys close up, I can really get a good gauge, but you can just see the difference. Like I said, there's no Tyreen Powell on that 06 team, so that would be a fun one for the fans to engage in.
Yeah, for sure. On that note, we go to Are You Crazy, who asks, besides going bowling, is Reggie Sutton's remarkable return the football story of the year?
That's one of them. I mean, I never thought he would be starting in the offensive line. I don't think Greg thought he would. I mean, this is a guy who started the season, Chris, and is the number – he wasn't even on a two deep. You know what I mean? He's the number three guy. He gets in there because Ty Needham goes down, and then Kamar Mazzouri really struggled. So it was kind of, break glass in case of emergency. And the guy was out there, and I think he performed better than anyone expected, coaching staff included. So, it just says something about perseverance and sticking with it and, hats off to him. I mean, you spoke to him too at length and, really nice kid.
Yeah, definitely a really nice kid. It's one of the several football stories this year, but I think it's the football feel good story of the year. I would put it that way. Mm-hmm. Just seeing him, work his way up in the depth chart, given the circumstances, and to also, as you said, Bobby, really, earn that spot, in terms of his play on the field as well. I think it's been, really, really cool to see for him, given all that he's been through. So I think that's a great story for sure. Scarlet Horn, asks, who replaces Powell for the balance of the year? Does Rutgers just stay with a 4-2 and keep Mo and DJ at linebacker?
They're going to play situational. What gives them the best chance? Like if they're playing Iowa, does the third linebacker give him a better chance than the third safety? I mean, that's something for the staff to decide. But, I think you can bring in Jameer Wright Collins. I think you can bring in Moses Walker as a third linebacker along with Muhammad Toure and Deion Jennings. And I think, like I said, I've said it before, Muhammad's playing at a really high level. And I think you're going to see his game elevate even more now with Powell going down. But it's all going to be situational. They're not just going to bring certain guys in because a guy got hurt, and Jameer Wright Collins is a heck of an athlete himself. I think situationally he can do a lot of good things. So I don't think it's just a plug this guy in or we're going to change the scheme. It's they're going to play the same brand of football. They're just going to, use somebody else in that spot. And if they need three linebackers, they're going to use three. It's not going to be we're going to keep two linebackers just because Tyreem isn't there.
MC, I don't know if I'm saying that 100% correct, but can you name all linebackers who can help with depth? That's his question.
I mean, we've spoken about it in numerous questions. You got Muhammad stepping up, who I think is playing better than Deion Jennings right now as it is. You know, he's playing right up there at a level where Tyreem is playing. And then you got Jameer Wright Collins and Moses Walker also in there. So I think those are the guys to really watch as guys who could get more reps in the coming weeks.
And the second question from Isham MC is, what are the chances of Michigan having to forfeit all games won this season?
We're covering Rutgers every day, so like getting into the nuances of that scandal, that's not my area of expertise. I'd be surprised if they had to forfeit all of them, but you know, it's an unpredictable thing with the NCAA, so I don't know, that you'd have to ask their experts better on that one.
And one more question from Isham MC. I always thought that the tunnel under the Rutgers, under the student section of SHI Stadium would make a nice entrance for the Rutgers football team. What is in there now?
Under the tunnel, okay, well, there's a recruiting lounge in there in the middle of it. But if you go back on the side there, it's just basically, because we've done interviews back there, it's basically just nothingness under the stadium. So like the locker rooms don't really lead to that. If you go back there, you just see like a lot of storage, and actually, you know, they used to work out there sometimes. There used to be weights and stuff back there, and at one point there was a little trailer and they had us do media work there after practice. It was like we used to call it like a little jail cell. It was dark. It was, you know, you're in this little you know, it was like a little trailer back there, you know, it had like cages on the windows. It was really creepy. I don't think that would make a good entrance because, you know, that's on the side of it. But in the middle of it, that's where your recruiting lounge is right there. And on the sides, it's just kind of empty in the back. You can see they can even, it's real big back there. You can drive like an ambulance or a truck or whatever back there.
Yeah. And I'll also say, I actually didn't know that about the media room. So that was a cool story, you know, me being newer to the beat.
They would let us use it after practice. And it was, I don't know if it was a privilege or a sentence.
I like that. I will say, though, the tunnel, we walk through the tunnel that the Rutgers football team actually does come in from, the lights and everything they have in there. They showed it on the TV broadcast, I think, a few times, but it's a pretty impressive entrance in its own right. It's right next to it. So, you know, just because we walk through that to go do the post-game stuff after each home game. So that's okay, where, yeah, I was impressed by it, at least.
We got one more, Chris.
One more. Scoot 24, who asks, can you foresee Greg Schiano 2.0 pulling a Jim Harbaugh switching quarterbacks next season if Gavin Wimsett doesn't improve on accuracy development through the spring? Say if Najani Shepherd is more accurate plus can run. For instance, Harbaugh's been on a switch out productive QB for a better QB to help his team achieve their goal. Do you think Greg Schiano would ever move away from Gavin Wimsett next season if he has a low completion percentage still?
If he's not getting any better and he's getting worse, he's not going to stick with a guy like that. I mean, we don't know what's going to happen. We don't know how much he'll improve, how much he won't improve, how much Johnny will improve. It's popular to talk about the backup quarterback. Everybody kind of likes, you know, to discuss that. But look, they put all their eggs in the Wimsett basket, and they're developing him. He's progressing. He's the guy. Unless he goes down or just completely takes a million steps backwards, he's going to be the guy. So if you're making a wager, who's your starting quarterback going to be next year at this time, barring injury, I'd bet my money on Gavin Wimsett.
Yeah, I would have to agree with that. It certainly seems like, you know, and he's taken, you know, steps forward compared to last year. It's a lot of steps forward. You know, only a redshirt sophomore, plenty of time to continue to develop. By no means a finished product, but you can see the progress there. So I think to project to next year, I think, you know, there's a good chance we see him come in next August and, you know, looks like an even better quarterback. So I think that there's a lot of room to watch there. But that does it. We've gotten through to the end of our questions. I want to thank all of you for sending in your questions. I want to thank Bobby Darin for helping me out answering them.
Yeah, it was a long one. Thank you for making it to this point, if you're listening.
Yes, of course. But we're happy to take the time to answer all of your questions. As a reminder, we'll have full Rutgers football and basketball coverage right here at scarletnation.com. You can interact with me, Bobby, Brian Doan, everybody on the VIP message boards as well. And we've got a lot coming up. Backstretch of football season, tip off of basketball season coming up in a couple weeks. So there'll be plenty of content, plenty of stuff to discuss and to cover there. So stick with ScarletNation.com for all of your Rutgers sports needs. But that'll do it for us for this time on the Scarlet Nation podcast. For Bobby Darin, this is Chris Jonas saying thanks for listening. Talk to you again next time.